Our next case, Fuller versus Hester. Fuller versus Hester.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Mitchell Stelling. I'm the attorney for the appellant, Brandon Hester. This matter arises from a concurrent and custody action in the Home County District Court. Parties were never married in this matter, and the relationship between the parties ended prior to the birth of our child. The child was born as Isaac Fuller. Evidence was presented that the appellee did have the primary placement of the child throughout the entirety of the child's life, over time of trial. Appellant testified that he was not notified of the time of the birth, that he made efforts to try to see if the child at the hospital and was denied, and that he was not allowed to contact by the appellee despite his efforts until the child was about 1 year old. And even then, there was no regular contact despite his efforts until the child was about 3 or 4 years old. At that time, for about 8 months, he was having regular visitation with the child. That ended in about 2015. Visitations were stopped. He was not allowed visitations. That led to a dispute between the parties, which we admit led to a conviction on the part of my client for third-degree domestic assault. At the time of trial, at the time of trial, in this case, he was serving a term of probation. And then there were no visits allowed by the appellee until there was a temporary order entered in this matter. Evidence further indicated that the appellant lived with, at the time of trial, with his fiance in Hastings, Nebraska. She's the custodial parent of her own child from a previous relationship. And that the appellant also has a child from a previous relationship named Mason, whom he has visitation with every other weekend, and that that conformed with the same weekend visitation which he had Mason. There was also evidence that the appellee had a child from a different relationship as well. As it relates to support issues, evidence indicated that the appellant works as a laborer. He works at least 40 hours a week. He's not guaranteed more. He's paid $21 an hour. And I think his testimony was that the average is being 40 or 45 hours a week. He does make contributions to a 401k, and he does pay child support for Mason, his own child, in the amount of $375 a month, and he also provides health insurance for Isaac and Mason. There is also evidence that the appellee works 40 hours a week and is paid $15.40 an hour.
Mr. Stella, can you tell me, it seems to me that most of the argument on the custody issues is aimed at her. Tell me affirmatively, what about him? It makes him better.
Well, if we're in positive aspects of aspects of the appellant, we believe the evidence showed that he was a very caring child, both of the children, both of it, Mason from a different relationship, and with Isaac, that he hadn't taken great efforts in spite of many roadblocks to have a relationship with his child. And that he would have made great efforts had he been provided the custody of the child to make sure that the child had a relationship with both parents. So I believe in terms of the positive aspects of Mr. Hester, that those were the qualities that we would have believed indicated that he would have been the better custodial parent. And those were in addition to the other evidence that was presented in terms of his qualities considered negative aspects of the
Counselor, I understand that mother prevented seeing the child. That's an outcome. But that also works as a relationship which hasn't been for a long period of time. The way I understand, basically since this proceeds,
I would argue that he had some contact with some child prior to the initiation of the proceedings. There were about 8 months or so of visits taken that he was having regularly with a child prior to the domestic violence incident. But otherwise, yes, I would agree that his contact with the child had been limited. I don't dispute that it would be a problem in terms of the minor child has spent the majority of his life with the mother, but I think that the evidence also indicates that the appellant did make great efforts to try to initiate that contact and that relationship, and he was prevented from doing so. So is it a problem? Yes, but it's, you know, to use an equitable term, it's an unclean hands issue as well, because he, you know, it wasn't because he wasn't crying that he didn't have that relationship. And I do believe that the evidence indicated that the relationship between Isaac and Mr. Chester or the appellant, that relationship was actually pretty good at the time of trial, and that the relationship between the appellant and between the minor child and Mason was also quite good.
Mr. Silk, I
want
to jump to the name change.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
My understanding that the standard for a name change or name change should only be changed when substantial welfare of the child requires it to be changed. Can you tell me what the substantial welfare of the child was that required the name change?
Well, what we would argue is that it wasn't the best interest of the child if the name changed. I mean, if you review the record, the only evidence that was necessarily presented as related to the name change were a set of specific questions that I asked Ms. Hester, which were essentially the same factors that the court's supposed to look at in the case that was cited, the Sling v. case, it's 276 Nebraska 114. I would argue that there was evidence that was presented that the substantial welfare of the child was an issue. I'm not going to say that the child was going to have harm for not having the name changed, but there was evidence from Mr. Tester that the change of the name of the child would substantially help in the relationship between Mr. Tester and the child and between Mason and the minor child.
Didn't Ms. Kohler also have another child that had polygamy?
She did have another child. I do not recall the last name of that child. Your Honor, I recall
it. Provide your view of the record that child has that polygamy. So how could that then work when she is saying both in her argument that, no, I want to know my polygamy because she has a step?
That's certainly an argument that could be made by Ms. Kohler. We would argue again that the only evidence that we present at the time of trial, other than perhaps if the other child's last name was mentioned, the only evidence is essentially either neutral on the factors that the court's supposed to consider or weighed in favor of the name change to Tester.
Did the judge actually went through the process considering those factors?
I don't recall that the judge's order had a contemplation of each of the factors. I don't believe that it was that specific. No, because I assume that the judge would have considered those factors when making the determination.
The purpose is to already be the court.
Yes, but I would also note that this body, at least in terms of a name change, reviews it de novo on the record. So I think that this court would make its own determination. But I would agree that Judge Young, not including the thought process necessarily, would make it more difficult for this court to make this determination. Did you want to have any other questions regarding the name change? The one issue that I wanted to at least make sure that I brought up was we did include an argument as to thought there was an error in terms of the imputation amount that each company makes. So I'd ask the court to consider that. But the court will have time in order to make sure that I address the dependency exemption issue. The order is silent on the dependency exemption, which means that the appellee is the custodial parent, will be receiving the dependency exemption every year. You believe that the court abuses discretion in not dividing that on every other year basis?
Presumably that your client would like to be able to have that in the years that's current on his child support?
Yes, he would, Your Honor. He was ordered to pay $524 per month in support, which based on the court's calculation is approximately 56% of the support. Also, half of the daycare expenses, half of the medical expenses, and he maintains self-insurance, self-shopping. So for these reasons, we argue that it was inequitable that he not be allowed to claim independence gains and benefits.
It's my understanding that there's a cost of health insurance discussion.
Yeah, that's correct. It was $125, I think, to have both Mason and Dyson. Thank you for your consideration.
My name is J.D. Satterfield. I represent the appellee, Miles Fuller. May it please the court. The evidence in this case showed that supported that the appellant had a limited relationship with minor child. Prior to the beginning of this action. The testimony at trial, I believe, was mixed. The mother said that the father did not try, except for a few occasions, and she did not go out of her way. She testified to include. The evidence at trial, which included the third degree domestic assault, in front of the incurring front of the child, and the mother stated that she at times was fearful, and I think that the evidence showed a reluctance to allow her way to include the father who wasn't making any efforts on his own. And in regards to the child support, which was addressed by the appellant, the father testified that he works 45 to 50 hours per week, that he made $21 per hour, and that he did work overtime, which gave him time and a half, and the child support calculation imputed, I think it was the 45 at $21 an hour. It didn't, could have, I think, imputed 48, 50, which was his testimony, but that gave him the monthly income of $4,950, which was what the calculation was based on. Regards to the exemption, as appellant stated, In general, the custodial parent is presumptively entitled to the federal tax exemption for an independent child and for may exercise equitable powers in order the custodial parent to execute a waiver. You know, I think in this case, the father was already, was previously ordered pay child support on his other son, Mason, which in turn, by the time child support was ordered in my client's case, that made her amount in relation to the father's income low. So I think that it's well within court's discretion to make up for it in that way. That's what the court's thought process was as far as equity, to either not address the exemption or to give the custodial parent by default full exemption.
Would you agree that based on the calculation that Mr. Testrack provides 55% of the child's expected cost?
If that's what the calculation states, then yes, that's what I would agree. And as far as the cross appeal, it's beyond the name change being whether it's in the best interest of the child, I think is sort of the first standard, and then it's the burden is on the appellant in this case to show that that the substantial welfare of the child requires that it be changed, and you have these 10 factors that were set out, and know that the judge did not explain his reasoning in the decree. However, I believe that if you look at the record and you go through the factors, the misconduct of the parents, the mother's behavior, keeping the father away from the child is misconduct. We would argue that even a greater misconduct is the domestic abuse that was involved right when this case started, got kicked off. As far as the parents' failure to support the child, father testified that prior to this action beginning, he didn't support the child at all. And the mother, on the other hand, provided all the support. Another factor, parental failure to maintain contact with the child. I think that the evidence of the record, like I said, is disputed. In that regard, the mother testified that, as I said earlier, that she didn't go out of her way. However, neither did the father.
I believe Mr. Chester testified that when he found out about the ICE work in the hospital, I think that testimony has come from him.
Stacy, the mother, testified that was the case. She had purposely gone to a hospital where she was able to keep her name off the record, or off the roll call, or whatever it would be called, the hospital. But she was a private thing. She wanted her mother there, and she wanted her sister.
And then the birthday party, was invited to attend, and I got there and lay on the air.
I don't believe that, from what I recall, the testimony was that he showed up unexpectedly. The length of time that the child has had the surname, the child was given the child name from birth, and child was 5 years old at the time of the trial. As far as custody is yet to be determined. However, at the time this action started, she was the primary caregiver. She was the primary custodial parent. Without an order.
What's your position?
My position on the exemption is that, you know, the custodial parent, in light of the low amount of child support in relation to the father's income that he was required to pay because of the other child previously, I think that it's fair and equitable that the mother receive.
What about the summary?
Very similar argument. The custodial parent and years costs that occurred throughout the year, and case law indicates that it may be equitable in that case for there to be.
Thank you.
I believe Mr. Sullivan, that's correct.
Thank you. And that concludes the first day of our meeting.